Good morning and welcome to WSAU Feedback. I'm Meg Ellison. Thanks for joining me this morning. My guest is Dr. Pierre Corey. He's a rock star in my world anyway. It's been a bit since we've chatted last. Good morning, Dr. Corey. How are you?
Hi, Meg. Nice to hear from you again.
Yes, absolutely. So there are so many topics that we could discuss as we talked about off air. Let's just kick it off by talking about Joe Biden right after he parted the Red Sea, he declared that the COVID pandemic is over.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, what a miracle.
as ridiculous as that is, it's still a humanitarian catastrophe. They're burying how bad it is. I mean, the vaccine campaign is just so toxic and lethal, and that's ongoing. So, what I would say is, and none of this matters, but if he's saying that the pandemic is over, why wouldn't they should lift all the emergency authorizations at the federal and state level and stop the mandates? I mean, none of these work to do anything about the pandemic. They only made it worse. We have to stop with these emergency powers and these terrible public health decisions that were made in this so-called emergency.
Well, I mean, I guess it begs the question, if the pandemic's over, then the vaccine campaign should be over as well, right?
Absolutely. Well, it never showed to work. I mean, across the world, we saw increases in cases. There was no impact on mortality. In fact, the excess mortality, that data is now coming out and it's screaming from everywhere, from the UK, from Australia, from the US. I mean, the vaccinated have a far increased excess all-cause mortality. The life insurance industry is screaming it. The disability data is screaming it. I mean, it's overwhelming. This is one of the most historic medical interventions of mankind, the most damaging and destructive. I don't know that the history books will get it right, but we're watching history right now, and it is really, really terrifying. Yet these mandates are marching on.
Well, and the harm that it's causing. Let's just take as an example, and as I shared with you off air, I read your Substack, and I've talked with our listeners about the Substack and how it's, well, at least for now anyway, it's a relatively safe place to exercise your First Amendment rights to share information with other concerned citizens that are armed and equipped with common sense. But
but I'm glad you brought that up, Meg, because really, what you just said is so important. I mean, the real data and scientists who are debating, doing analyses and presenting them, it's only on Substack. I mean, the journals are censored. You can't publish, global or national level analyses showing this all-cause mortality. The journals will not publish it. And so you see it on Substack, you see it on preprint servers, but the censorship is massive. But I find Substack to be a really important refuge to get really strong scientific insights into what's going on out there. But if it wasn't for Substack, we'd be in a lot of trouble.
Well, it's, I guess, what the very last free speech bastion that we have here. And it's horrifying. In light of the fact that just this past Saturday, we celebrated Constitution Day, so you'd think that it would be a little bit more of a priority for more people. But only if you... parrot what it is that, as the mainstream has been, the mainstream media, the mainstream whatever government, federal government has been pushing on the American citizens. So this particular Substack, this is actually from not too long ago, actually. I guess maybe I just printed it out this morning, but this is back in August. But it's still there are still obviously women that are being that are affected by this. The miscarriage rate among vaccinated pregnant women. It's horrifying.
Yep. I mean, not only do we have a number of original sources of that data, which, again, this is, if you look at the history of the pharmaceutical industry, I mean, they are a criminal industry. One of their standard practices is to bury adverse events of any novel product that they're coming out with. And, they've paid billions in civil and criminal fines for doing these kind of behaviors. They did it again with the vaccines. They knew there was data showing early on that there was massive miscarriage rates, and it's in the original trial. Now with the FOIA request and the release of the Pfizer documents, I mean, there are huge teams of volunteers at the Daily Cloud under Naomi Wolf's organization that are doing deep dives. And I've been privy to some of the things that they've been finding, and we're starting to put it out in like little kind of bulleted summaries. But the miscarriage data that we found was absolutely terrifying. And that's also being supported by dropping birth rates around the world, which suddenly began this quarter of 2022. When you saw January 2022 in a number of countries, Sweden, Germany, Hungary, you see these sudden, never before seen drops from month to month in birth rates. I mean, birth rates will vary throughout the year by a certain percentage. You know, certain times of the year people have babies than others. But we've never seen a drop of this magnitude from one month to another. And it happens to be timed from 9 months to the ramping up or the peak of these vaccine campaigns.
Well, and I see in your Substack you refer to our federal government's agency as the PFDA, and then identify that the P is not a typo. And I mean, I've been saying for quite a long time now that Big Pharma is in cahoots with big government, which is, you know, of course, no surprise to you or our listeners.
It's called regulatory capture. I mean, the agencies have been under a state of total regulatory capture for far longer than COVID. It's been well documented, well written about. But in COVID, it was so brazen and transparent to those of us paying attention that it literally is the PFDA. I mean, Pfizer runs that thing. I mean, they run all the agencies through Fauci. And I'm sorry, it's just the simple truth. He's been working on behalf of the pharmaceutical industry throughout his 35 years. And as the head of the biomedical industrial complex, it's, you know, I assure you read RFK Jr.'s book, but it's extremely well detailed what he's done over his decades in power. And what he did in COVID should go down in history. I mean, he caused twin mass humanitarian catastrophes. The first one was the millions of needless deaths through their suppression of effective early repurposed drugs. And the second one was this promotion of this global vaccine campaign, which would turn out to be using one of the most toxic proteins in history. The spike protein is devastatingly toxic. And whether you get it through the disease or the vaccine, I mean, the idea that we're continually vaccinating with this spike protein, it's just so demoralizing. And people don't understand it. You know, and then the third catastrophe, Meg, is the huge amount of people in this country who are disabled from long-haul COVID or the vaccines. And I mean, that's starting to be documented. Even Time magazine wrote a big article just yesterday talking about how they actually use terms like this is a humanitarian catastrophe because of the millions who are disabled and sickened from having recovered from either the vaccine or COVID.
Well, and speaking of recovering from COVID or having vaccine injuries, I have had listeners reach out to me that have described, you know, unfortunately they were forced by an employer or for whatever reason they took the COVID shot, as I'd prefer to call it, and now are suffering in some way as a result of it. I know that your organization, and it's the FLCCC, the Frontline Critical COVID-19 Critical Care, I think I got that right, you have some recommendations for those that have been injured in some way by the COVID shots.
Yeah. So that's really what we've been working on these last few months is we're really focused on trying to figure out how to treat long-haul COVID and vaccine injury. And those two syndromes have a lot of overlap. They're very similar. There's a few differences, but they're very complex. The patients are chronically ill. There are no proven therapies, and there's very little research on therapeutics. I mean, there's almost none being done. And that's another abject failure. I mean, the government has just failed in so many ways. But the failure to really fund and research trials of therapeutics for these people is astounding. I mean, it's a huge failure in public health. And it's even worse for the vaccine injured, Meg, because long-haul COVID, at least the academic medical centers have clinics devoted to long-haul COVID. Now, I'm sorry, I'm just going to be blunt. They happen to be worthless because all of my patients that see me in my private practice have been through the system, have been through these clinics. It's just endless testing and referring and then a recommendation for, like, physical therapy. I mean, there's no trials of medicine. And the vaccine injured, it's worse. There is no clinic for vaccine injury. There's no wider recognition of the vaccine injury. There's almost no papers being published on it. There's no centers of excellence, and they're some of the sickest that I see. And it's a tragedy. And so, you know, I want to also mention, Meg, that our organization, not only have we worked on a protocol of medicines that we have identified that counteract the mechanisms triggered by the spike, and it's working. I mean, we get a lot of patients better. I will tell you, some patients are really difficult to treat, and I don't have a lot of success with them, but with the majority, we do. And we're trying to figure this out. And so we're putting on the first medical conference in Orlando. It's in October 15th, 16th, really devoted to practitioners. And it's a true scientific medical conference. You know, we're leaving out any political statements. We just want to focus on the science and the therapeutics to learn from others and share what we've learned in treating this. Because there is no effort. There is no effort at that. There is no national protocol. There's nothing. No society has published a guideline for the treatment, maybe the evaluation, but certainly no treatment. And so it's another huge void in our public health and academia's response that the FLCCC is trying to fill. I mean, we've worked full tilt, Meg. It's just crazy.
So I guess if the media doesn't report on your conference, it's like it didn't happen. Are you getting a good response from, it has yet to be, you have yet to hold it, but are you getting a lot of people signing up for it and interest in it?
Oh, yes. It's already, we're at 200 registrants, you know, physicians, providers, and still a month away. So we are getting good exposure, but it's the usual thing with media, right? There's certain portion, it's independent journalists, podcasts, some friendly radio people like you, as well as, for instance, I would say our biggest supporter and who's really, I think, been most accurate on everything COVID is the Epoch Times. I don't know if you read them.
Oh,
but
yes.
Epoch Times has been, you know, really helpful in uncovering a lot of the issues that we talk about. And so, I mean, we get some coverage, but like you said, it's not major corporate legacy media. It's, you know, it's alternative media, smaller media, more free media. Freedom media, I guess.
Right.
I don't know.
So, you know, I have to ask, and I mean, it may sound like a kooky question, but I presume you've been asked it before. Is there some ulterior motive in all of this? Is it or is it a combination of incompetence on the part of our federal government and big medicine and big pharma, or are they really trying? Is it nefarious? Are they trying to depopulate?
So here's the answer. That's a good question. I would say there's two reasons. One is a little bit more benign. So, you know, modern medicine is extremely conservative. When I say conservative, I don't mean politically, but conservative in that the doctors in modern medicine the last couple of decades are literally training to do nothing until some randomized control trial comes out and a guideline is issued. Doctors are not taught to shoot from the hip, to try out therapeutics, even if they're already FDA approved. You know, there's no sort of like significant response. They're taught that there's nothing proven, and unfortunately these patients are suffering, and we don't know what it is, and they're waiting around for a treatment. And that I've sort of observed in my career in medicine. I've always found it to be really damaging to patients. So that's one thing. That's a somewhat less benign explanation. But the other is this massive global censorship of the toxicity of the vaccine. So you don't want a syndrome called the vaccine injury syndrome, right? Because that would be admitting that the vaccines cause illness. And so that censorship, that's the sinister one. And that's why there's no clinics. That's why there's no real good papers published in high-impact journals on this. You really have to go to third and fourth tier journals. And even then, it's case reports and mechanism papers. I mean, the censorship of the journal level, it has been absolutely criminal.
Well, before we run out of time, I do want to mention that you are working on a book. And I can't even believe it. We haven't even mentioned the I word, but ivermectin. And I mean, I happen to think that. And I mean, I'm no professional. You're the doctor in the conversation. But rather than vaccinate anyone, if we had just treated with a repurposed drug and kept it in our medicine cabinets in our homes like we do aspirin and Tylenol and ibuprofen, we wouldn't have this long haul cases because we would have we would have nipped it in the bud, so to speak.
Yeah, and it would have decimated the vaccine campaign. And that's exactly the crux of my book, is that after we had identified ivermectin as a highly effective early therapeutic, the book is everything I learned afterwards about how pharma conducts disinformation campaigns when an effective generic drug is identified. And that can be in any disease model. It's been going on for decades, but the scope and the scale has never been as impactful as the one on ivermectin. And I would argue they also did the same campaign against hydroxychloroquine. So it's really not about ivermectin per se. It's really about what they do when repurposed drugs appear. And I'll just finish by saying, and you know this, Meg, that when you brought this up in that question, ivermectin was a massive threat to the vaccine campaign. They had to destroy it because no EUA would have been possible, and vaccine hesitancy would have skyrocketed. People would have, given the choice between one of the safest medicines in history in the form of a pill and taking a barely tested, novel, toxic, never unprecedented vaccine. I think a lot of people would say, I'll wait on the vaccine. I'll just stick with the pill. And they knew that. They had to destroy vaccine hesitancy. And so the war on ivermectin, it's my book detailing how they conduct these campaigns, everything I witnessed. I have like really deeply documented evidence of everything they pulled at the journals, at the agencies, at the WHO, in the media, the PR campaigns unleashed, the horse dewormer thing. That was a PR campaign. They have some of the most talented PR agencies working for them. I mean, that's what they do. They manipulate the media and the narrative.
It's insidious.
Very, very good.
Yeah. Well, so finally, we're running out of time, but I have to ask this, and it's obviously not going to be a short answer, but that's okay, because I'd rather keep talking with you. I have read a number of accounts from embalmers and funeral directors that say that they're seeing these peculiar autopsy results, and or I don't know if it's autopsy, but they see these strands in people's bodies, and I guess for lack of a better way to describe it, and I've heard this from a number of people that are maybe somewhat cynical, that in a few years, people are going to be dropping dead as a result of having, they may be healthy right now, but because of that spike protein, it's going to attack their bodies at some point in their lives, shortly.
No, I got to correct you there, Meg.
Okay.
They're dropping dead now.
Oh, all right.
I mean, those cloths, I mean, are unprecedented. I mean, no one's seen those kind of huge, fibrous, very extended cloths that are filling arteries. And we're seeing massive amounts of sudden death. I mean, you see news reports every day across the world of people suddenly dropping dead, doing healthy activities. Now, people have always dropped dead suddenly, but we've never seen these amounts of reports. And I mean, that's one of the acute side effects of these sudden arrests, which are either from massive strokes or heart attacks. And, you know, again, that's being covered up. It's just not being talked about. These embalmer reports, it's real. It's happening. You only see it mentioned in like peripheral newspapers where they talk to the embalmers, they show the pictures, but you never see that in any major media. But it's happening.
Well, it's terrifying to me. I mean, our conversation could go on and on. I will make sure that it's not too long before our next one, because obviously we want people to be buying your book, The War on Ivermectin. I see from your Substack that it can be pre-ordered right now. So,
yep.
And they can also go to your website as well. Is that right?
Yes. And I don't have a personal website, but I think it is on the flccc.net website. But I would encourage them to go to that website for a look at our protocols, some of the providers that we list there. I mean, we've collected lists of providers who do early treatment, and many of them are now starting to treat long haul and the vaccine injury.
And you can at least give maybe a glimmer of hope to those that have been vaccine injured, because you have your telehealth clinic that you provide care for people with either long haul or any kind of vaccine injuries. Well, Dr. Pierre-Corey, thank you so much for all that you're doing. It's always great to chat with you, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks, Meg. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye. Have a great day. Got to go to a break, and I'll be right back. We'll roll right into the 8:30 news, followed by your calls on the other side of WSAU Feedback. Good morning. Thanks for joining me on WSAU Feedback. Yes, it's that time again. Got to go to another break. Went a little long with my guests. It was well worth it. Dr. Pierre Corey was my guest this morning on the first half of Feedback. You can check out the podcast if you missed it. Shame on you. On WSAU.com. I got you covered, though. Be sure to tune in during the second half of Feedback, and I'll be taking your calls. 715-845-2155 right after the news on WSAU.